to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
I have to remember that. Oh, yeah. I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for attending. 7:02, we're going to call the meeting to order. First order of business is to respectfully acknowledge the Qualicum First Nation on whose traditional territory this meeting takes place. And then I'd like to move on to welcome and introductions. Starting on my far left is Corey Vanderhurst, our auditor. And we have Janine Sibley, Alyssa Woodward, John Marsh, myself, Colin Thompson, Crystal Kuhn, Craig Kirsten, Suzanne Leroy, and Diane Cope. Before we, you've all seen, if you haven't, there's a message from the chair within your handouts. I'm not going to take the time up here to read it out. You can all read it at your leisure. But I do want to thank you all for your support, for coming out to this meeting, for showing interest in your community. We've accomplished some things. We have a long ways to go. But if we stand together, work together, agree to disagree, on the principle of all of us getting better together, life should just be nice in this lovely community. Before we approve the agenda, I'd like to allow John Marsh just to say a couple of things with respect to how the agenda has been written and presented. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Colin. I was responsible for preparing the agenda, and I made a couple of mistakes on it, so my apologies to the board on that. The tradition here is to have the financial statements and auditor's report come first, ahead of other items, so that the auditor can do his part of the AGM and then go to his other pressing matters at home and not have to stay for the rest of our meeting. So I would ask the board if we could switch the order for the financial statements from number 6 to number 5. The annual general meeting becomes after the auditor's report. In addition to that, there's a question and answer after the auditors, but there shouldn't be a question and answer after each item. The question and answer is at the very end of the agenda, other business, question and answer period. So what I'm asking the board to do is to make those adjustments that there'll be two question and answer periods. One, after the auditor speaks, then the auditor can leave, and then at the end of the meeting. In addition to those changes, there's two more, and this is an addendum to the annual report. There's a handout, the one with the red on it, from the Fire Rescue Society, and there's also the Fire Chief's report. The Barb from the Fire Rescue Society, she was away during the time that we required this, and wasn't able to get it in, but as soon as she got back to Deep Bay, she got it in, and that's why it's a late item, so thank you for doing that, Barb. And also the fire chief had some circumstances where he was away from the department for a couple of weeks that he had to deal with, and as soon as he got back, he completed his report. You will note on the fire chief's report, there is some duplication between what is on the larger report and what is in his report, and that is because we didn't know for sure if he'd be back in time to do a fire chief report. Anyways, that sounds a bit confusing, but to just go over one more time, item 5 becomes 6, item 6 becomes 5, we have question and answer after the auditors, and then at the end of the meeting, and we add the Fire Rescue Society report and the fire chief's report to the AGM document. Thank you.
Thank you, John. So I'd like to ask the board if they would consider approving John's recommendation on how we amend the agenda. And I open it up for discussion. Suzanne.
Should there be question and answer after the water operator's report segment? So that the water operator can leave as well, or is the board willing to do that?
Well, if I could.
Yes, please. Sure.
First of all, the tradition is to have after the auditors in the end of the meeting. So that's why that was done. But to answer that question, I thought of it too when I was speaking to Colin, but the issue is that they kind of go together. Like usually the item EGM and water is where most of the significant attention gets to, so they're one after another, and often they relate. If it's a water issue, which is in the EGM package, that's why it's there. Usually the water report doesn't come to this meeting, it just goes to a separate meeting. I just felt the timing was perfect in terms of when the water report was here, and my experience has been the ratepayers have been, there's more attention that goes to water than goes to fire, therefore we felt it was appropriate to put the water report on this agenda.
Thank you, John. Any further comments on the proposed amendment to the agenda? Seeing none, then I would ask the board to raise your hands if you would approve the amendments as stated by Administrator Marsh. Please raise your hands if you're in support. Thank you. Looks to be unanimous. Thank you very much. We will move forward with the approval of the agenda. Can someone move that? Thank you, Crystal. Any discussion? Calling for the question. All those in favor of the approval of the agenda, please raise your hands. That would be unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to item 4, 2023 AGM minutes. The recommendation before us is that the board receive the 2023 Deep Bay Improvement District Annual General Meeting minutes. And these minutes were approved at the October 15th, 2024 board meeting. So I make that recommendation and I open it up for discussion. Please signify if you have any comments, then I will address you. Seeing none, we'll call for the question. All those in favor of receiving 2023 Deep Bay Improvement District Annual General Meeting minutes. Please raise your hands. Thank you, that's carried unanimously. Number 5, the Annual General Meeting report. Thank you. Already I'd forgotten, I didn't write it in. Corey, I open the mic to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to the board and the community for inviting me again here to present your AGM. I will take you through some highlights of the 2024 financial statements. If you're following along in your packages, I am starting on page 36 of 64. I'll give you a minute to flip to those. Oh, while you're flipping, we did meet with the board in March, on the 18th, and they have approved the financial statements. A big thank you to staff for going through the audit process with us, for getting everything up to date, and ready for the audit. We really appreciate all the assistance. So on page 36, this is your statement of operations, or your income statement. I'd like to start here. This is the activity throughout the year. The regular operations, this doesn't include some of the capital projects. I'll get to those on a separate page. But you can see for 2024, total funding, revenues, parcel taxes, sales services were $1,013,000. So there's an increase year over year from the $900,000 in the prior year. You can see increases there in the investment income as the interest rates were high for the year. You were able to earn a good rate of return, as well the parcel taxes that were increased as per expectation. The expense side of things, total expenses of $679,000. You can see we break it out there into water and fire protection. There are schedules in the back of the statements that break that down, but the water service costs increased from $422,000 to $456,000, primarily with some repair work, as well as increases in salaries and wages. On the fire protection side, also an increase from $199,000 to $223,000. Most of those increases coming from some minor equipment purchases and depreciation on the new assets on the fire hall and fire truck. So an accounting surplus at the end of the year of $334,113. If you flip forward two pages to page 38, I say accounting surplus in that $334,000. because as accountants, we like to put a lot of adjustments through there and depreciation and other things. When you look and compare the district's budget to actuals, the cash flows is a much closer metric to that budget idea. So the operating activities, around the middle of the page, you see this net cash provided by operating activities. That's the net cash inflow for the year, and it was $949,906. And then tangible capital asset purchases, so that's primarily fire truck, as well work done at the Thompson Clark West water main and some other equipment, $1,072,000. There was $267,000 drawn out of the investment accounts into the general bank. And at the end of the year, the main bank account increased by $145,371. So your cash balances at the end of the year were $323,000. Now we'll get you to flip back a couple pages to page 35. And this is the balance sheet. A snapshot of what's in the district's accounts at the end of the year. You can see we just said there's $323,000 in the cash accounts. There's also $2.1 million in investments. Most of those in your reserve accounts for future projects. So cash, investments, and amounts to be received total $2,552,000. On the liability side, total liabilities are $1.6 million. The largest balance there is that capital tax advance debt. So that gets paid down annually by the amounts that are on your property tax notices. As well, there's always some accounts payable at the end of the year, and we do have an asset retirement obligation reported related to asbestos in the walls in some of the older portions of the building, and that is an estimate. But you can see it hasn't changed year over year at $63,000. That won't change until work is done, or if any regulations change and we have to report a different amount. So the district has a what we call a net financial asset position, if you were to subtract all the liabilities off of your cash balances, of $939,000, so that has decreased a little bit year over year, but not a significant drop. And then you get the non-financial assets, so the tangible capital assets, the water system, the fire equipment, trucks, and the fire hall and admin building, of $4.7 million. So that is the historic cost over time of all the acquisition and construction and purchases, and then we depreciate that to estimate the usage. So at the end of the year, an accumulated surplus of $5,697,000. However, it's important to note, if you flip to note 10, apologies, that is page 45. I will end at page 45. So this number of accumulated surplus, $5,697,000, the water and fire funds have small surpluses, $209,000 and $459,000, so $668,000 of surpluses there. There is $1.9 million set aside in reserve funds to be used for future projects, both you can see for water and fire. And then you get this $3,112,000 of equity and tangible capital assets. That is not a cash balance or funds available. That's the value of the assets that were purchased minus that debt. So the funds available for future projects is the $1.9 million plus the operating fund surpluses of $668,000. So there's a very quick run through of the financial statements, but I will pause there and open for questions.
Sorry, are you finished?
Yeah, happy.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Excuse me, would you mind going to the microphone so the benefit of everybody to hear? Thanks very much.
Is this on? Is it on? Okay. I'm just curious on this, there's one page 42, it delineates all the different funds, which is great. I'm just trying to figure this out in my head. What's the difference between the restricted reserve funds and the internally restricted?
Great, thank you. And I'll attempt an answer here, and John, feel free to jump in if you want to give a more detailed answer. So you can see there they're split into, and they kind of are a little look like a little out of order there. But There's a renewal fund for water and fire, and a capital fund for water and fire. So again, the difference there is what the intended use of those funds are, right? The ones that are in the fire protection capital and the water capital can only be used for capital projects, for significant new assets, right? Versus the renewal, which would have a different purpose to it. Could be capital, could be for other works if they had to do significant repairs and maintenance and things like that. I'll turn it back to John if he wants to give any more detail on those balances there.
I'm sorry, I don't have anything further to add to that. I didn't bring the reserve fund bylaws with me to the meeting just to look at what those bylaws state. They are on the website, and an answer would be there. But certainly, if someone wants to phone when we're in the office next week, I'll be happy to answer that. I believe there's something on the website, but that's also something I think we could write a memo on to the board, and then the public will have access to it just to understand what that is. And I need it. I've only been back for a couple of months now, and I need a bit of a refresher on it myself.
Okay.
Thank you.
And so I guess the money's going into those two funds comes, is that a cost chart? So where does the money come from that goes in?
So each year in the budget, the district would be determining if it was going to contribute into those reserves and put money aside. So it will be part of the budget process to make a decision of how much to put towards future projects. And you can see the other increases, some of them are increasing by small amounts, so you would have some interest allocated that it had earned. Other ones, you know, if you look at the second line, restricted reserve fund water renewal has gone down, so it would have had some usage and some of the capital projects throughout the year. But the main way to put money in there is through the budget process and to set aside how much you're planning to use in the future. It is possible in those internally restricted ones for the board to set motions and to preserve funds going forward by a board motion. It's far more common to do it through the budget process, though.
Budgeted for $64,000 and actual costs or expenses were $118,000+. And benefits were budgeted $25,000 and they actually spent $17,000. So the note there says CPP plus EI plus pension plus WorkSafe plus in lieu. What does that mean?
Great, thank you. So I will note that page 22, while it does have actual numbers coming from the 2024 financials, it is the 2025 budget. So some of those amounts are budget amounts for the current year. The actual expenses, as you follow along, the second column is actual. So wages for the current year, and I think that was one of the comments there, wages in water had been $118,000. The 2024 budget was under budget for that amount, so that you can see the 2025 budget comes to $125,000, which would reflect a full year of wages for
position. Maybe I'm confused. I'm looking, it says 2024 actual, 2024 budget.
Yes.
So am I not interpreting that where $64,000 was budgeted, but in actuality $118,000 was spent? Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And if you look at the prior 2 years, the 2023 and 2024 actual expenses for the administrative position were 94 and 118. So it is that 2024 budget amount that is under where you would expect it to be. So the 2025 budget is bringing that back up to what would be, you know, the actual anticipated costs for the administrator position.
Okay, but you're up substantially. So the benefits, CPP plus EI plus pension plus WorkSafe plus in lieu. What does in lieu refer to?
I could
answer. Yeah, I'll get to, yeah.
The, for example, if employees like myself, when I worked in the municipality, you have a benefit package, and I did get certain things. Here, there's no benefits, but in lieu of the benefits, you get 15%. So if you're working, say, in a municipality or regional district, you'll often get medical or dental or various fringe benefits that come with it. That doesn't exist here. And what they do is they give a cash payment of 15% in lieu of the benefits. And that's been in place for, as far as I know, quite some time, certainly prior to me being here.
Well, I think I was aware that there was in lieu of benefits. I thought they were 10%, but 15%, okay. But was that not to cover things like CPP, EI, pension, RSPs, whatever?
No, the CPP, EI, they're statutory.
Okay.
So, they don't. The in lieu ones that I'm referring to are things like life insurance, dental, medical, that the district does not offer to employees. And they give a cash payment in lieu of benefits. And I said it was 15%. Maybe at one time it was 10%. Perhaps, Diane, do you know what the number is, 10 or 15?
It depends.
Yeah, so it's been 10 and 15. So you're not wrong by saying 10. Okay. But I believe mine was 15.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty
helpful. The one that says pension is probably more applicable to the 2025 budget because we provide pension now to our staff that qualify. So that's new for 2025, so that necessarily isn't part of 2024. The other thing is the fact that the expenses were higher than what was budgeted was because we had such high staff turnover and our staff had to work extra hours and extra time in order to keep up. And we had to pay more for the people that we were hiring than we ever did before.
Yes, I understand that there are negotiations that resulted in a much higher
at a market level, possibly.
Possibly. I know that other neighboring districts are not paying that much. They're paying about a third.
They haven't had to go through three administrators either.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Okay. Any first-time speakers? Any questions? I think they've asked you all they need to ask you, Corey.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Corey.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Corey. Gentlemen, I believe we are looking at the financial statements and auditors to report we just saw, so now we'll move on to the annual general meeting report for 2024. The recommendation for the board is that the board receives the 2024 annual general meeting report and that it be published on the website. Can I open it up for discussion?
Sorry, we haven't done the recommendation that we received.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, item
so, six. Item six, recommendation. Yep. Recommendation. Thank you, and thank you, Trustee Leroy. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. We're moving back to item five with the recommendation that the board receive the 2024 Deep Bay Improvement District financial statements and auditor's report These financial statements were approved at the March 18th, 2025 board meeting. Open for discussion. Seeing none, we'll call for the question. All those in favor of this recommendation, please raise your hands. Getting ahead of myself. So shall we retract it to have a make the motion?
I'll second.
And a seconder. Thank you. We'll move forward to the calling for the question. I saw no discussion, so please raise your hands if you're in favor of this motion. Carried and so ordered unanimously. Number seven, the annual water system report.
No, we're back. Sorry. Misordering a bunch of stuff here. Now we go back here where you were.
We'll get it. The annual general meeting report for 2024. Recommendation is that the board receive the 2024 annual general meeting report and that it be published on the website. Could I have someone move that motion? Trustee Kirstens, thank you. And a seconder. Yep. Trustee Kuhn, moved and seconded. Open it for discussion, please. Seeing no hands, we will call for the question. All those in favor, please raise your hands. Carried and so ordered. Thank you.
Now number seven.
Moving to number seven, the annual water system report for 2024. Recommendation before you is that the board accept the 2024 annual water system report for information and direct staff to forward the report to VHA and to publish on the website. May I have someone make that motion, please? Trustee Cole, thank you. And I'm looking for a seconder. Trustee Kirstens, thank you. Open for discussion. Seeing no hands, I'll call for the question. All those in favor, please raise your hands. Carried and so ordered. Moving on, number eight. Trustee honorarium for 2025, budgeted amount for 2025 is as follows. The chair, $1,400, trustees, $800, for a total of $6,200. The recommendation before you is to approve the honorariums. A ratepayer is required to make a motion specifying the amounts, and then another ratepayer would be required to second the motion. If this occurs, then approval of the gallery would be required for the motion to be approved. So, gazing out to the audience, do I have a mover of that motion? Please raise your hand. I will take the lovely lady in the front row.
Diane Jenkins.
Diane Jenkins, thank you.
Skyanne,
sorry. Skyanne, S-K-Y-A-N-N-E. S-K-Y-A-N-N-E?
S-K-Y-E.
S-K-Y-E-A-N-E. Jenkins.
Thank you.
Thank you. And do we have a seconder? Please, your full name?
Me? Karen Hewish.
H-U-I-S. Karen Hewish. Thank you both. So we have it moved and seconded. Is there any?
Was that H?
Yeah, H-U-I-S-H. Hewish. Karen. I open this for discussion for the floor. And if I see no hands, I will call for you to make the question. All those in favor of the honorariums for your board, please indicate by raising your hands. Thank you very much. Contrary minded? Abstentions? Carried and so ordered. Thank you very much.
Question and answer.
Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the business of the agenda package. And I again want to thank you all for attending 2024 annual general meeting. It is now time to open up the meeting for our question and answer period. Before doing so, I will explain the significance of the literature you picked up with your agenda tonight. On Sunday, May the 11th, our administrator received an email from a resident containing a number of questions. He sent these questions for comment to all trustees. As chairman, after reviewing these pertinent questions, I felt that the information contained in these questions was significant. In conversation with our administrator, we decided that he would research and answer these questions collectively with our water operator, so we would have this information available for all attending tonight's AGM. This document will also be made available on our website. Transparency is a vital component of this board's commitment to ensure that we provide the necessary information to all our residents. Now we will move on to question and answer period, and here is how it is going to take place. I would ask that those with a question come forward and form a single line over at the mic. Each speaker will be permitted to ask one question. They will then move to the back of the line if they have a second question. After all first-time speakers have had the opportunity to ask their question, I will invite second-time speakers to present their question, and so on. We will follow this format until everyone has had the opportunity to ask all the questions that they have. Thank you very much. We now open it up to those that would like to step up to the mic. Thank you kindly.
Hi, my name is Don Coghill. I'm ratepayer, live on Jameson. First of all, I'd like to thank you for answering my questions. I very much appreciate that. It helps to address some of my concerns. So now that being said, though, what you gave me in information is great. It's pretty much exactly what the previous water operator did. But yet we're seeing a 31% increase from last year to this year for the new water operator. So
is there a question, Mr. Coghill?
Yes.
Thank you.
The question is, why are we paying 31% more for the same amount of things being done? What's the question?
Well, if I could, I've looked at both contracts. I spent a lot of time when we were looking at these questions without getting into details of who does what, that kind of thing. The reality is, from my standpoint, when I came in, there was a new water operator. When I left, there was a previous one. I asked what happened, and he left, voluntarily left. So then it went to bid. So to compare what the price was to the previous operator is not really relevant, except because it went to bid. What's relevant is it goes to bid, and then the board looks at the bid proposals, all the details that are in the bid documents, and then makes a decision on how to go forward and which bid to receive. My understanding is there were three bids that were received. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, next speaker.
George Bradish, Pioneer resident. My question is, and I see Stuart McClain's here, is there any update on the trail that's proposed between the Deep Bay at the railroad line? If we can get some information if anything has happened along those lines?
I'll defer to Stuart.
Thank you for the question, George. The REM park staff is looking to secure proper licensing. The pathway proposed is also going to utilize a Ministry of Transportation road right-of-way up to Bay Road. So it'll be a loop around essentially where the water main is, but also connect up to the school through an underused road right-of-way, which is also where another water main is located. So the licensing is being worked on. However, unfortunately, we lost our local parks planner to the Comox or Couchin Valley Regional District, so we've been kind of delayed a little on some of that work. But it's still getting worked on, and they've hired a new parks planner, which will cover our area as well as a couple of the other electrical areas. And I'm hopeful we can get it done as soon as possible. So, best I have to offer at the moment.
Thanks, George.
Is there any first-time speakers? I see Mrs. Milburn coming to the mic, followed by Mrs. Milkey.
I meant to ask this question at the beginning. Is this meeting being recorded?
And I am apologetic to all of you. I was tasked with saying that if anybody is recording this meeting out in the crowd to let us know, and I will defer to Janine. Is it been recorded?
Yes.
From the table?
Yes.
It has been recorded on Janine's phone. Is there anyone else in the audience that is recording it, please? Thank you very much.
And will this recording be part of the audio recorded minutes like the monthly meeting on the website?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay, great. So thank you for that, for audio recording the meeting. I just assumed it was that. And recording the board monthly meetings as of September 24th, that's great. Audio and video would be even better. But maybe we're moving in that direction, I'm not sure. I know there was a technology committee technology committee that was established in September 2024, I believe, but then it was dismissed because of reasons for cost, privacy, storage issues. What I would like to know is, can you explain to ratepayers why the board does not use the DBID Zoom account to allow ratepayers, not just absentee trustees, to attend meetings virtually? It was possible during COVID, but why not now?
Who wants to take that?
Well, I think our Zoom account has expired at this point in time. I know they are. I think part of the problem is that we don't have the hardware in order to provide that. So we're working on it. There is stuff in the budget for that for this year. So we have to just, we're doing the best that we can with what we've got. And right now we're testing equipment for recording, and we'll see where that goes. That is a Zoom-capable recording.
Yeah, it seemed pretty easy during COVID, and I know it was well received.
I wasn't here in COVID, so I wouldn't know. But I thought it was just the board members who met.
No.
Okay, no. I wasn't around,
and
so I don't know.
And I have a...
But with that too, I just have to say, with that too, you were all sitting at home with your computer in front of you. You weren't sitting in a room looking for a camera to be part of that process and to have recordings done that way. So if we were all sitting at a table like this, to do that, we would all have to have a laptop or a computer in front of us. We'd all be staring at that. It's really easy when you're sitting in separate rooms to do a Zoom. But once you all come into the same room, it requires different technology.
I do know people that work in other industries and do Zoom or meetings that it seems to work through Zoom. So, just a question, but I think the audio and video recordings are really important. And I brought this up at the 2022 AGM when Mr. Marsh was our administrator then. And the reason for pretty clear. So, thank you. I'm glad that you're working on it. I hope to see you.
Thank you.
So, Mrs. Milkey, so it's with the chair. The Canadian government is the envy of the world because Canada promotes the rule of law as well as the principle of all people. So Canada promotes the rule of law as well as the principle that all people are equal under the law, which includes freedom of speech. As per the Improvement District's Trustees Handbook, which I'm sure everyone has read, I quote an excerpt. Making open, transparent, and informed decisions demonstrates the trustees' respect the public's right to know what issues have or may have an impact on their services and how well the trustees are addressing those issues. In order to have a positive relationship with the community, our board will often hold meetings that are open to the public unless there are sensitive matters where the interests of the improvement district or an individual are compromised. Publish and circulate a newsletter. Hold public consultation processes, enact policies for dealing quickly with public complaints, and adopt a code of conduct for the trustees. Recently, in the Pipeline newsletter, an insert was used to caution ratepayers against expressing their concerns for water safety and delivery. Also, public consultation has been ignored or discouraged, and publication of committee meetings has been discontinued, although Trustee Cope did promote it in the past. I would like the chair to answer, please. This question is, why is this current Board of Trustees trying to suppress public dialogue and participation in this community?
You spoke of freedom of speech. It's also freedom of opinion, and Mrs. Mielke, that is strictly your opinion. I do not feel that we are holding anything. I believe that we are trying to be as transparent as we can, and each and every one of us behaves themselves. We have had to deal with a lot of issues outside the parameters of what we should have to deal with. But moving forward, we are trying to do best for you in the community, and we will continue to do so. Thank you very much. First time speaker. Thank you. I forgot to ask you to please state your name when you come to the mic. Thank you.
My name is Martin Ortiz. Question, I've got a few questions, but I'll stick one at a time. In the water system projects, you know, complete 2024 completed studies, and you have a line in there from the Herald Engineering study that where you emphasize in more than one place about water tank appears to be in serviceable condition and can be expected to provide more years of service, 10, 15 plus years. In that Herald Engineering report, they have a caveat that says it's 10 to 15 years if maintenance is done on the report. And they list, as you know, a number of these are not recommendations, these are caveats that it would be 10 to 15 years if a number of steps are taken. What steps have you taken? It says you continue to carry out the identified tasks. Which of those identified tasks have you completed?
The expansion lip for a future cell that, of course, won't be going on there. That was filled in last fall with concrete. Because they identified that was a likely source of some contamination coming from the roof. The hatches are going to be removed and refinished because they're all rusty. And with seals put around the hatch lids already. And if we ever get some warmer weather here, the contractor is going to come back and he's going to call the conduit pipe access to the hatches with a sealant that will stay. When that's something that should have been done when those conduits were put in years ago for the skate upgrade. So those are the upgrades that are the repairs that the company identified, and they're done or they're going to get done here in the next few months.
There were seven steps that were identified, and you've done one, and that sealing around the hatch and that failed.
And it's going to be redone.
Okay, so you completed one of the seven tasks. That's right.
I don't have a list with me in my book. But it was inspected. They said it was clean inside. The former water operator said it was clean inside. So, and currently it's being operated in a different manner than it was in the past. Every day some of that water is entering the distribution system in order to keep it freshened.
So what Mr. Martins is referring to, the recommendations, it says the water tank appears to be in serviceable condition and can be expected to provide more years of service, 10 to 15 plus years. The following is a list of recommendations to maintain the DA water tank, i.e. reservoir. One, remove the exposed rebar projecting from the walls on the south side of the tank. I believe that is set to be done shortly. engage a water specialist to determine the sources of water contamination. If the source of water contamination is determined to be a result of ingress through the roof or the walls, or and an extended service life is desired, the following remedial options may be considered. And it says install a flexible sealant in the joints and cracks, which we have done. Apply a membrane, either flexible or sedimentitious, not a word that I would know, inside the tank. Apply a two-ply SBS membrane to the roof of the tank. Fill the notch along the top of the south wall with concrete as described in figure one. That's the last one we did as well. So there's six items, not seven, and we've done the majority of them, or at least half of them, and we are still working with BHA and the water operators.
We did a cursory look at installing a liner, but due to just a decade of use, it wasn't worth the expense, and for very little, if any, benefit. And liners can be quite problematic because inevitably there'll be a spot that the adhesion was 100%, and then you start having it delaminate.
Are you a water engineer?
No,
excuse
I'm
me.
A mechanical engineer. No.
Thank you very much.
Are you?
Any other first time speakers?
Sorry, I was just gonna add to that. So yes, I've been a general contractor on this island for 50 years. I've poured thousands of cubic feet of concrete. I've been up on the reservoir looking at the roof. The previous guy who did work there in 2012, all the forking, the cracks and things that showed up on the roof that he redid has stood up really well. So although the engineers said one of the options was putting another roof on it, we didn't think that was necessary as the ingress from water is not through the roof. It was through the expansion joint that was left for addition, which has now been taken care of. Same thing as Craig mentioned, the piping that was drilled into the side of the hatches was never corked originally. We're going to get that done. They try to do it. I guess whatever product they used didn't stand up, so they're going to come back and redo it. Also, on another note, the reservoir was pressure washed. It was actually quite disgusting shape, so all the algae and moss and stuff that was growing on it, all the water running down walls and into all those cracks was part of the issue. That has been taken care of. Another thing the engineers mentioned was to stop the groundwater, the overland water, from flowing against the reservoir. Craig and I actually went there personally and dug a ditch around it to prevent that. So I think we've actually done our due diligence quite well.
Thank you. Thank you. First time speaker, please. And a question?
My name is Claire Hilscher. My question is about the most expensive capital project of the 2024 year, so that being the Thompson Clark West project. I continue to look at the engineering reports on the website, and there really is only one engineering report on the website that recommended that pathway for that expensive pipeline relocation. And that engineering report was done at the request of a ratepayer who hired their own engineer and paid for it and gave the report to the district. So that wasn't an engineer that the district hired. Engineering is a very self-regulated, highly regulated profession, and they do maintain a website of what's going on with their regulated members. I wondered if, prior to investing in that project, if anybody on the board looked at that website in 2024, because there is a pending disciplinary hearing against that engineer. And I will read why. It is for failing to identify and analyze the hazards and risks of landslides. The question is, did anybody investigate that website before investing in that expensive project?
We have reports from McElhinney Perry Engineering on that line, and one of them is the asbestos concrete. Asbestos cement pipe replacement program, where they identified that specific piece of our water line as the most at risk in our whole area. So it was not just one report that the board relied on, there were several reports.
Forgive me, that wasn't my question. McElhinney did not recommend that corridor. The only engineer that did was the one I mentioned.
Here, I've got it right here, if you'd like to see it. Right here. Thompson Clark West, lot 44 to Ocean Trail, asset rating number 13. That's the highest, and if you look at the report, it actually sets out that, as well as Gainsburg Road to Thompson Clark as number 12, and Island Highway to well number 8 also is 12. So those were the highest rated, and Thompson Clark West to lot 44, Ocean Trail, is the highest asset rating that we had that needed to be, was critical, that's what they call it.
The document that you have does not say to move the pipeline to a different corridor, it just says to replace.
Thank and McElhinney also
Thank
did
you
other
both.
Reports.
We will shut this down now, it's not a debate, but I will make one comment. I'm a hands-on guy, I'm not good at the big reports and all that stuff, but I want you all out there to know that I walked the line physically with Chris Pogson some time ago. And though I couldn't get him to commit, because that's what engineers have a tough time doing, Chris Pogson alluded to me back then that yes, the line needs to be moved, he just wouldn't say where. So, for those of you that cannot accept the fact that the McElhinney Engineering Group that has been doing engineering for this district long before I ever showed up, it seemed to be the only one that we were ever going to pay attention to. They have stated, as has been reported by my fellow trustee Diane Coe, that out of all the problems with our system, the Thompson Clark West Ravine Line was rated number one. I don't know what you expect us to do as a board, other than to pay attention to people that are somewhat more qualified than us. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Can I say something? Yeah, I'd just like to add something to that. So I've read all the reports many times. If you go and have a look at the ravine, you will see yourself to replace the water line in the ravine where it was is totally just nuts. We've spent less money than they said it would take to go through the ravine. They would just totally damage that ravine. I don't know if their costing had even taken into account some of the damage that would have occurred. So we've actually moved the water line at the same cost that it would have taken to go through the ravine, and we have not damaged that beautiful ravine. So I think everybody should go and have a look at that instead of just reading reports, and have a visual inspect and see what you think of it. Thank you.
And the other thing too was the right of way that we had on the private property where the pipeline was running was not wide enough for WCB standards. And one of the original options was to expropriate more land to widen the right of way so that proper work could be done to build a trench if you ever had to replace it. So to replace it, we would have had to expropriate more land to widen the right-of-way. And then the piece of pipe, as you know, that fed the school didn't have a right-of-way for it. The district in the past had put in a T into the school and had not legally done a right-of-way. So there were all sorts of things with that property that would have cost us more money in order to replace it, as well as the risk of the damage of the ravine.
So we're getting into a bit of a debate, which we said we weren't.
Yes.
But I did want to say, because something was said about no one else, I forget the exact wording, brought up the other options. I walked that site. The first time I walked it, and it was with Sean, I forget Sean's surname from from McElhaney. He was a project engineer.
Sean O'Connor.
And I asked him why we haven't considered putting the water line on the other side of the tracks. I've been involved, I'm an accountant, not an engineer, but in my past experience, we've been dealing quite a bit with hazardous slope issues, so I've heard a lot of engineers talk about them, and I didn't like the look of the ravine, so I just asked them, what about the other side of the tracks? And he said, well, they haven't been asked to do that. So that was the response. I can't remember whether I went back to the board on that, or whether the resolution was broad enough where it authorized that we were to look at all the options. So I can't remember what. But from that discussion, they then went and looked at placing the water line on the other side of the tracks. So whether the first contacts must have been something like keep it within the existing right-of-way and not take it off, I'm not sure how all that transpired. But shortly after that discussion that I had with Sean, they started to look at the other side of the tracks. So whether it's, we said one engineer, but certainly that seemed to pique the interest of McElhaney when I asked that question. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, any first time speakers? Thank you.
I'm surprised to hear a former trustee questioning why the water line was moved. I think everybody understands why it was moved. When McElhaney costed out all the options, they costed out the other side of the tracks at well over $1 million. They figured that going through the gully would be half of that. I told them there was no way that they would do it for that. And I told them their costing was inaccurate on the other side of the tracks. When the bids came in, they came in at approximately half of what McElhaney estimated and probably within $100,000 of what I estimated. The gully right now is in a condition that if somebody was to go down and push on the fence, I'm sure the whole works would collapse. There's a big chunk gone down.
Mr. Chair, what's the question?
Excuse me.
What's the question?
Excuse me.
Identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry, Susan. I'm George Cusno. I'm sure.
Ladies and gentlemen. State the question, Mr. Cusno, please, and thank you for your comments, but do state a question.
Well, I'll just leave it at that.
First time speaker? Did you get a chance to ask? Did you speak once already? Oh, you did, okay. Second time around? Second, beg your pardon? Yeah, so she should be first. If you would like to be first, you are first.
Can I change the topic?
Perfect.
I am looking at page it's our budget, page 24. And I mean, I'm going to go on about the reservoir. I see that the reservoir replacement is in there, estimated cost of $1,125,000, and then you project over to 2035 to 39, and that's $1 million. And I guess that's just inflation that you up that number. You get to, okay. So I can't remember whether it was 2 years ago, before Johnson Park anyway, where our budget was, we had a bit of money set aside, and I think I'm guessing $700,000 to $800,000 for the reservoir.
No.
It was in the water capital budget.
Please, can we have a question?
I'm getting there. We had the money set aside because I remember being at the meeting where it was set aside for the reservoir, and I can remember Diane's language, the budget was fluid, so it got moved to Thompson Park, which is is what happened. At this point, though, I'm a little concerned that if this is a fluid budget, that money might go somewhere else. So I'm wondering if the board is prepared to pass a bylaw that designating that money that's being set aside that is strictly funds for the reservoir. That's my question.
This trustee would never vote for that. Sorry. The money that's put into the capital reserve fund that comes from the parcel taxes for is for all things within this district. So if we were to put money there and we had a water main break on Gainsburg, we would have our hands tied as to we couldn't touch that money. So no, that's not in the best interest of this community, in my opinion.
So what you're saying is that potentially the money that is in that budget line item could be used for anything. So it's really not set aside for the reservoir?
Right now, if you look at
right now, if you look at 2035, we're in a deficit of $4 million.
So in 10 years or 15 years from now, when we really, really need a reservoir, what's going to happen?
Your guess is as good as mine right now. Deep Bay Drive water main is supposed to be replaced in 2035, along with Gainsburg and Thompson Clark Drive West. Those are also large projects. Now, those could be moved out. And quite frankly, the reservoir can be brought back in. It all depends on what the needs and what the community is doing at that point in time and which one is deemed to be most at risk. So, I mean, we're not trying to not have the reservoir built. That's not the point. The point is that we only have a certain amount of funds and we have a whole bunch of projects that have to be done. So it's for us all to work together to get it there.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good.
If you have another question, no problem. Stand in line and you'll have your opportunity. Yes, first time speaker. Thank you. Before you speak, I'm going to allow Trustee Marsh to have, or Administrator Marsh to have a comment.
Yeah, I just, only because a lot of ratepayers may not know this, and even some board members for that matter, had time to digest the report that's on the agenda for next Thursday on our board meeting. There's a asset management memorandum, and what that deals with is operations and capital and just bringing more structure into our budgeting process where we look at risk, efficiency, a whole number of factors. And I don't disagree with anything that Diane said there, but this will be a more holistic look at everything, and I think it could improve our budgeting, but still, my recommendation will always be don't tie your hands because an emergency can come, and that memorandum even speaks to that. This asset management plan is going to take several months to complete, and then it'll be improved upon over a couple of years. If we ever want to get a government grant, which would be nice on a reservoir to get a government grant, and there is some movement out there that improvement districts could become eligible for government grants, one of the first requirements is, do you have an asset management plan? And if you don't, you can't even apply. So it's going to bring more structure, likely improve our capital expenditure planning, and in my opinion, kind of ties in with some of the issues that I just heard on this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marsh. First time speakers, for a question, please.
Thank you. Can I just make a statement? Is that okay?
If it's brief. There's been a lot of statements already, so if it's brief.
I come to these meetings continuously to hear disgruntled trustees, water operators that are grinding a bit of an axe. This is the most beautiful place on earth. Let's move ahead. It's 2025. We're fighting the same battle over and over and over and over again. Every friggin' meeting. Let's put it behind us. Let's move ahead. Everybody, come on. This is just too much talk about the olden days. Thank you, and thank you for
Seeing no first-time speakers. Mr. Coghill.
Thank you. With financial prudence in mind and 640 ratepayers in our community, I'm wondering why through our administrative costs overall, administrative expenses overall, from 2022 to 2025, we've seen 31% increases over those 3 years, as well as a 48% increase over those 3 years for administrative wages. So 640 ratepayers, we're not Parksville, we're not Qualicum, we're not Courtney, we're 640 homes. So I don't believe that any of those communities outside ours, even Parksville, Qualicum, Alberni, are paying 48% a year increases. So I know my pocketbook's not thick. I mean, there's people I've heard from in my community that are in tears because they're not sure how they're gonna pay their parcel taxes and additional costs you're putting on these people. I'm not opposed to increases if it goes to our infrastructure. That's important, I get it. We reservoirs, pipes, you know, it's all aging. And I'm 100% behind that, if that's what we're gonna put the money to. But right now, this is insane.
Thank you, Don. We can't control economics in Deep Bay, and it's the economics of retention and recruiting. And it's not like we turned people away that were qualified. So we need staff, and we need to pay accordingly.
Financial prudence, please. I mean, you put too much burden on us for certain things, right? Just, I ask you, I mean, you're just like me, you and me, just please
thank
prudence.
You.
Okay,
thank
that's
you.
All I ask.
Thank you.
The market rates for administrators are what they are. Yes, it has gone up significantly from the past, but if you want qualified people to do decent work, you gotta pay them.
Makes sense too much.
I mean, we were a little shocked at what we had to pay for, but you know, we keep having the turnover administrators because they see what a tar pit they walked into. We have to pay a decent wage to attract them, otherwise they're not going to be here. And then if we've got administrators that aren't up to the task, then we're just going to have a whole bunch more problems come down on us. So that's what the market's wanting, and that's what the market's getting.
Just one more comment. The fact that we have part-time staff, we can't offer somebody a real job, although it is a real job. It's not a full-time job, so you've cut the market down right there for who would even consider applying to drive all the way out here that has the qualifications that we require.
Comment from John Marsh.
Comment from staff on staff wages. I'm the interim administrator. When I came back, I asked that I be interim administrator. Perhaps the board would have asked me that, but I asked first because I wanted that title. And when I don't mind telling you what's in my contract, I asked for that all you have to do is give me 1 day's notice if you want to fire me. So they thought that that was unreasonable. They got 1 week. So bottom line is, if there's someone out there who's better at this job than I am, then contact the board. And if you can convince over half the board that that person is a better option than me to take this job and financially save Deep Bay some money, it's all in your hands. I will not have bad feelings or anything towards Deep Bay. I offered that up when I agreed to come back. And my current job is 21 hours per week. I've probably worked at least 40 per week. I've not claimed any of that overtime yet. I'm not saying I will. I am not saying I won't. When I came back, I said, I'm only coming back if I can blitz this job and get all these things caught up administratively in finance that I somewhat dropped the ball on in 2023, and others haven't picked it up since I left. I came back, we got the 2022, 2023, 2024 water reports done, the AGM report done, the finances, getting our internal finances up to date with what the financial statements are. So if you look at the summarized financial statements that were in this document, if you go back and look at the April board meeting, you'll see details of all our assets and liabilities that match up with these financial statements. So if you have some questions that you can't find in the financial statements, you'll probably find on our records. So from my standpoint, you're getting good value. Thank you. Thank you, John. Question, please.
Yes, question. Although I just wanted to congratulate John Marsh on getting us back on track and meeting here on time. So,
oh, you're coming to ask.
I'm curious, something new that I haven't seen before. And
yes.
These questions that were submitted in advance, can you provide answers? You might consider making that offer for people that it might be more, you know, where people can put in answers.
Could we please have a question?
I'm just making a suggestion on using, offering the questions.
Could you make a suggestion in the form of a question, please, sir?
The question, not related to that.
I'd like to answer that one.
So in on question 7, answer 07, has to do with the January 25 boil water notice. It says was completely. It says due to construction tie-in new water meter. I haven't seen that being reported previously by the board or anywhere else.
How it has. It was talked about. It was talked about when they redid the line. It is out there, Mr. Martins. It is out there and has been reported. Is there a further question, please?
That's the question.
That's the answer.
Where was it reported? Where? Just out there is very unclear. Where was it reported and how was it determined?
The information was disseminated to us, the board. It was talked about the new pipes, the cut-in, the whole issue of replacing the pipes caused some turbidity. Mr. March, we will get that information for you and we will get back to you. Thank you very much. We have a comment from...
Yeah, just on the question on the questions, when they're done in advance in terms of getting them in, most ratepayers don't end up going to the board with their questions. The questions are handled internally. So if someone phones and asks a question, we'll try and get it answered without it going to the board. There are some ratepayers that prefer the board. It gets publicized more, but most, it's just handled internally. So in terms of making an offer, well, anyone, if they have a question and they want it answered, contact us at staff and we'll do our best to answer it. But if the ratepayer is more interested in getting it, like on the audio and everything through the formal process in that way, then it has to go to the board. But I would say 10%, less than 10% of questions end up at the board. 90% or whatever it is are handled internally.
Those kind of questions are very good at answering.
Thank you. First time speakers, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name's Bob Leggett. I'm a resident here, right there. Much of what I've heard this evening comes from us, and there's a great deal of animosity, it seems to me, that's gone on for a long time, because some people had a plan.
Mr. Leggett, I appreciate it, but I have cautioned everyone else with respect to a question, I would love this in the form of a letter. The question is coming. I appreciate that.
I just want to frame it. And I want to put to you, Mr. Chairman, why I'm asking this question. Some people have had a plan, some people didn't know about the plan, that was most of the community. What were our priorities? Where are we going? That is still, I think, unclear to a number of people here. We don't know what is in store. We've gone through an official community plan. Many of us have taken part in that. But the improvement district should be dovetailing with that. I've heard that we are going to have asset management emphasis, and that's a great thing. So given the fact that there was that, given the fact that people would like to see a plan, and given the fact mainly that the improvement district handbook requires that, that on top of all the things you've had to do in the last few years, really it all goes to creating a strategic plan for the improvement district. And my question to you, I'm sorry I took the long way to get here, is will this board commit to working towards and start some part of a planning process where we can actually make it make sense of it, so we know where we're going, where the district's going, and we can interface with the regional district and others so we know where they're going and judge ourselves accordingly. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Who wants to take that?
Anybody interested in taking that?
So we talked about our plan for the reservoir. It was by the inspector saying 10 to 15 years, erred on the side of being a little more cautious. We plan to have a replacement in 10 years. There's a plan. In the meantime, there could be water main failures that we're not expecting that will have to be dealt with, and that can push things back. There's only so much money to go around, as we all know. The big project that we did, the Thompson Clark West, is completed. It came in 10% under the budget from McElhinney, came in around $550,000. Those numbers of a million were quoted initially. So we should be confident that we can manage these projects. And yes, in time, the reservoir cost is going to go up. There's a lot of debate I've heard online that designed replacement reservoir could be converted to a two-line reservoir. It could, but it would sure be a lot better if it was done ahead of time. Be a lot cheaper. So we've approached McElhinney, so not to throw that engineering away, that in time we're getting closer to building a new reservoir. If we build a reservoir, that will take us into the future. And unfortunately, the future, and it's coming for everybody, is treated water, which I use chlorination. It's going to happen whether we like it or not, and whether it's going to be because of cause. It's just the government is wanting to err on the side of caution. A single line reservoir does not lend itself well to being effectively chlorinated. So we want to do it right the first time.
Thank you. Any first time speakers, please?
Second time.
Second time. Chair Nolan, this kind of falls on the heels of what we were just talking about with the Thompson Clark. Trustee Pearson, you said it came in 10% under budget and came in around $550,000. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, can you please explain for me on page 24 the capital replacement schedule estimated cost? If I'm confused, even more confused after your comment about the 550. So, on page 24, under accumulated reserve total beginning of the year, there's two entries for Thompson Clark West water main. First one is Thompson Clark Drive West Water Main Project 2020. There's an entry in there for estimated cost $40,000. And then the bottom line
of that section. It says Thompson Clark Drive West water main remediation replacement, estimated cost $687,000, and then 2025, $90,000. So that adds up to more than $550,000. And and then on page 15, it shows a dispersal of $88,700 for engineering and $548,598 for construction, which is a total of $637,298. None of those figures are the same, so I'm confused.
Okay, I'll address the 2020 $40,000. That was money that was spent in 2020. That was our expense. That's just an estimated cost budgetary item. You don't see it in here. This is budget 2025 forward, and a lot of these things just haven't come off of this number up here. So that $40,000 was spent
in
remediation in 2020 area. Okay. The Thompson Clark Drive West water main remediation replacement. Those two numbers were the estimated cost of what we were going to be spending. That's all. Okay. 2024 is not in here. You probably would have seen the 2024 item as well. They just started at 2025. It's just not on this piece of paper. Okay. So the total should have come up to 687, 90,000 plus okay. the five, awesome. Whatever.
I still didn't get 687 because when I looked at page 15, it showed the dispersal of 88.7.
That's actual costs that you're looking at? And the annual report.
They were both over $550,000. And this project has been ongoing since 2020, so that leads me to my question. With a little bit of comment beforehand. There's been several requests for written reports and a full up-to-date accounting of all costs associated with this project, including legal fees. I've yet to see that, and I'm a firm believer that historical reference points and a breakdown of costs associated with any project are important for future boards. And ratepayers deserve to know how their parcel taxes are being spent. So, I would like to see a little more transparency and accountability.
The transparency is there, the accountability is in the fact that the auditor audited us and they didn't find anything wrong with what we've done. If you want a breakdown of the costs for that project, that's not a problem, but nobody has ever come forward and said, could you give us a detailed costing of this?
I've begged with you, I've asked twice, and the last time I asked was at the February meeting for a report, which never came to the board for the ratepayers.
You have that written down?
And I hope that it would have been, I hope that it had, would have been available for the AGM, if not before.
So I had this ready for you at the last meeting, but you weren't there.
I was.
If you want a copy of it, you can have a copy of it.
Okay, excuse me, I was at that meeting. I'm a regular attender. I've missed maybe four meetings.
And that's okay. No, we appreciate your concern. There is a copy here for you when you need it. And we humbly apologize that we did not get it in as timely a fashion as you would like. But here is a copy here. Thank you for your question. Is there any first time speakers? Is there any second time? Second time speakers. Is there any more speakers, period? Anybody want to make any closing comments? Or ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't look like there's anyone else that has any more concerns or any accolades or thank you very much for showing up. Honestly, appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedules to come and be a part of our community engagement. We hope we'll see you on the 20th, our next board meeting, 20th. 7 o'clock in the old fire hall. next Tuesday. Thank you, Mr. McCurr. Well, I have a move a motion to adjourn. Do I have a, don't need a second. All those in favor of adjournment? Motion to adjourn is accepted. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.